welcome to the program this morning. Good to have you here.
Thanks, man. Good to hear you.
Thank you. So everything went well. I don't know if it's something that you obviously that you want to. It's up to you. Whatever you want to talk about this morning. But yeah, so it's just like you see your animal just kind of, and you see people get sick, and you know, I've watched my parents, within a week of each other die.
Let me ask you a question, because this is something I've been wondering a lot lately. Is when I think I've always considered myself to be perhaps more so than others. I don't know. Maybe something's wrong with me. Maybe something is not wrong with me. Maybe something's wrong with many other people. I don't know. But I always consider myself to be sort of a hyper-empathetic kind of person. Like, my empathy meter is way off the chart. And I always remember when I was growing up, I remember feeling the way you're saying that you feel towards your dog. Mm-hmm. I actually remember feeling that way towards everything, all the creatures and all the. I was so fascinated with everything I saw, all the designs of nature and everything else. And I'm just wondering at what point that got taken away from me. I don't know what age that got taken away from me, but I do remember having that powerful sense of being sort of one with everything around me, and feeling that same way about everything. And I often wonder if that's possible to get back to, or if we can ever fix whatever it is that's stopping us from having such a strong connection to not just to our dog or to our wife or to our child, our own child, but even to our close, you know, the next family that we have, or to their family that we don't know. You know, this concept of not caring about entire countries of people, for instance, those darn red-skinned people or brown-skinned people, you know, let's bomb them. You know, where does that kind of mentality come from? Because I know it doesn't just come from the natural, you know, point of view of man. I refuse to believe that that is the case. Because I still have that hyper empathy. I still can look at everyone's sort of, you know, a point of view or feelings or whatever. The problem is at some point the ability to utilize that was taken away, and I was as the song goes, when I was young, I thought that life was so wonderful, you know, and that Supertramp song. I just wonder, you know, what exactly happened that we don't feel that way about everything? Just this wonderful being that of existence that is, and you know, I think I know the answers, or at least generally know the answers, but I just wanted you to think about that there's, you know, it is one thing to have a pet go. Trust me, I know how that is. I'm going to have to go through it here pretty soon. But, you know, there's this whole world out there of things that are being mistreated and tortured and just, you know, killed for sport. I mean, there's a whole freaking world out there to be sorrowful for. And, you know, I just wanted to put that out there for you just to make things a little bigger for you, and get you out of your own head, you know?
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, I know there's people out there that that have pets, and they but yet they are also hunters. They'll go out there and they will, you know, hunt and, you know, kill deer or something like that. But there's never that, you know, there's never that
sacrifice. It's
just wonder. Yeah. It's like, you know, something else out there loves that, whatever you just killed. Something else loves that, you know, that. And I don't want to be like sound like an environmentalist or anything, but I mean, I don't know that I could do that. You know, if I push to the point, I might be able to do it, but I don't know that I could kill something for sport.
I never understood the idea of sacrifice. I always thought sacrifice was, oh, let's kill pointlessly a lamb or something to the gods. And then I found out as I was researching into it, it's the difference between slaughter, which is what we do, a kill without any remorse or a feeling or care, and we don't care how our food gets to our plate. We don't consider the intense, design of nature that brought that beast to our plate, or that vegetable, or anything else, that water, for instance, right? We have no sense of sacrifice. That is why, even today, you're going to ask me which culture I respect when it comes to food. I would say it's the Muslim culture. Even though people think there's this barbarism there, they still, when I worked on this little organic farm, they specifically sought out an organic farm. They wanted our sheep because they were pure. They weren't fed a bunch of crap, right? We didn't inject them with anything. And we would actually allow these Muslim people, the peaceful, the real kind, the true kind, just like there's true Christians and fake Christians, most are fake. We would allow them to do their ceremony, their sacrificial ceremony, to hang the lamb up, slit it by the throat, which turns out to be the most humane, if you will, painless way. They just kind of go out in, and it sounds like it's something, like you don't want to be a part of it, but see, they are paying their due. They're paying their homage, their tribute, if you will, to God, to the creator of that which they are killing. If they did not do that, it would just be a slaughter. And that's where we're at. We have no sense of sacrifice in our culture. We don't think about these cattle yards. We don't think about the disgusting nature of our food supply because we've allowed these horrible people to take charge of it, these corporations which are not per people at all, right? We have allowed a really horrible thing to happen, and it's just part of the dependence aspect of all this, the oil, everything else is part of that. And so, yeah, that's the difference, man. You're either slaughtering or you're sacrificing. And, I'm all for hunting. Don't ever get me wrong, but I'm strictly and 100% against sport hunting, sport fishing, sport anything, because I'll tell you what, man. The whole idea of sport is how we are controlled. The Jews tell you how they control you. They control you through sport. They control you by giving you games and having you follow the rules that they create. That is how we are become the goyim. That is why we have none of those sacrificial notions. And so it turns out, anyway, that a sacrifice is actually a good thing. The reason that it was in cultures, not a sacrifice to the gods in pointless slaughter, but the idea that you are actually acknowledging what it is that you are killing, realizing and empathizing with the fact that cow or that sheep or whatever has a place in nature, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right, yeah. And I just, as I was going through the whole process with, with Jack dying, it was just, it kind of brought out, just some other things because, nothing like that has happened since, my parents passed in, in 2001, just prior to 9/11. And that summer, the summer right before 9/11. And watching Jack and thinking that, I'm going to be able to do something. I'm going to be able to, and I think that I waited too long. And then, of course, at that point, then I started, kind of beating myself up because, like all the stuff that I talk about, all the stuff that the knowledge that I have, wasn't enough to really kind of, turn the tide for him. So in a sense that, I know I'm not, but it makes me feel like I've failed, that I'm kind of a failure.
Well, you're never going to meet anybody successful that hasn't failed getting there.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, you have to fail to succeed. Because generally what you're trying to do is something that's not really natural, so you're fighting something that's not natural, so of course you're gonna fail.
Right. And Joel's, you know, she had two cats that died, you know, house cats that just, you know, died this summer, I believe she said, you know, and, I don't know whether, you know, people are forced to get vaccinations for their pets, things like that. I don't know if that's the case, whether over time that obviously your lethal injection documentary points out many things that that these vaccinations and immunizations are responsible for. I think maybe I don't know what the story is with that. But if these cats were not, I know Jax had some, but the food, you know, we had to look at the food. The grain-free stuff, you know, keeping the gluten and the things out, because that has its effect too, because, you know, gluten just kind of binds up and blocks, you know, nutritional pathways in the intestine, you know.
That's true. That's certainly true.
By GMO in this.
Right. I really hate the notion that everybody has outlawed or sort of demonized wheat, all, you know, clumped wheat into one category, when, you know, what really happened is some a-hole, you know, started genetically tweaking wheat and then it took off in the 1800s or whatever, and it started replacing all the good wheat. There is still good wheat. There's, you know, there's a guy at Young Living Farms that actually grows the wheat in the Bible. And people with celiac don't have a problem with it because it's not GMO. It's the original. It's like getting your hands on the original strains of marijuana, man. They got 1% THC in them and they're beautiful. They're a wonderful natural experience. You get some good, I can't remember what the, Icorn wheat from the Bible, and man, that guy grows that in his Young Living Farms thing. Sells it's really expensive, of course, because, you know, that's just, I won't say that's the way it is, but people seem to believe that when they have something unique, they need to up the price. Doesn't make sense to me, but, you know, I hate to have wheat, or anything for that matter, grouped into one category, so that it's demonized. You know, there's a whole push against gluten or against wheat. Wheat kills, wheat kills. Wait, what about the good wheat? What about the wheat that's been eaten for thousands and thousands of years? Are you serious? I mean, come on. You better have a disclaimer here that says, oh, by the way, there are still some good wheats out there. I'll say the same thing about milk. Milk has a horrible rap with black people, for instance. Most black people turn out to be lactose intolerant, but they're not really lactose intolerant. They're intolerant to the shit that's put on the store shelves that's not raw milk. But you give a lactose intolerant person raw milk, they have no problem with the milk.
Right, exactly. Because enzymes. I mean, the homogenization, the pasteurization, heating it up, and
Throw a little radiation in there.
Throw a little radiation in there as well, yeah. It was, you know, just one of those things that just kind of brings you, you know, brings you down to earth. Now, I'm not like one of most people are floating around out there, not, you know, aware of many things, you know, not aware of many things, but, you know, when Jack passed, and I guess the thing that we were thankful for is that, you know, we didn't have to put him down, you know, and it didn't look like he was really kind of suffering up until like the end when I said that Friday night, I said he's fading fast, you know. And then the next day we were going to do something on Monday, and then he just, you know. So maybe what I did, you know, maybe giving him silver, maybe giving him some of the things that I gave him, you know. I gave him some CBD as well.
Nice.
And maybe that just like took the edge off of, you know, the suffering or something. I'm, I, you know, I'm, you know, trying to, you know, think. I can't get it out of my head. But, you know, it kind of brings other things into the forefront, too, just life in general, how here one day, gone the next. And it just makes you feel like, ugh, like, you know, like, what power, what control do we have, you know?
Well, I think...
Help me, you know?
I think the difference between man and the beast is that they don't think that. We're the only ones that are truly, I think, conscious and very imaginative about our death and what happens after death. I don't think any animals out there are contemplating the afterlife, as it is called, which again is not anything to do with the Bible. But afterlife is not in the Bible. You can go look for yourself. I don't think these animals out there are circumspecting about, you know, what's going to happen after they die. I think that they're very happy that Shelley stuck around till the end and took care of them. And, you know, I don't think they have any kind of emotional, mm-hmm. You know, you see what I'm saying? Their mentality is so different, and in my opinion, almost better than having to deal with all the emotional, you know, roller coaster that we go through. But trust me, that dog was just happy that you were, you know, taking care of him.
Yeah, I know. I just, you know, we just think that. We always think there's something more that we could have done. You know, when my parents passed, I'm like, there's something that, you know, that I could have done. And then it turns out that post situation, you know, armchair quarterback, if you will, with disease and everything, I've really kind of moved in that direction of understanding and knowing, you know, after my dad was diagnosed and then my mom was diagnosed and then they both passed within a week of each other, that I truly, you know, believe that, you know, it's empowered me, in ways that I'm, you know, I'm kind of grateful for, you know. So, even what's his face? The guy, Henderson, you remember, you ever hear about him? Old man Henderson, he used to put out the Henderson Report.
I don't think so.
A lot of information. I think in the chat room, let me know if anybody has heard of him. But if you type in Henderson, it was this guy whose wife, you know, passed away from cancer, and then he just kind of made it his thing, you know, his life's work to find out more about cancer and find out more and how to help people. And he had a report and everything. So he just kind of honored, you know, her life and thus his own life by helping others with the information, you know? So,
well, that's kind of where I started, except it was, you know, I was wondering why the hell I was getting a cancer, you know, and
that's young. Yeah.
And eventually it came, you know, to when I started looking, the first thing I found was vaccines. And, at some point I realized, oh, well, shit, we all have been infected with something that will cause us to produce cancerous growths, carcinogenesis.
That's exactly where you went. I mean, that's where, when you started studying it, you started doing, I guess maybe the internet. Did you have internet there?
I always wondered about it, you know, because I was 17 in 1990 at the time. So, I mean, I always wondered about it. And then, most things, I think, most people out there have sort of two lives. Their pre-9/11 and their post-9/11 lives. It seems to be the marker place for most people. And so then that was about the time. Well, it was, you know, it was my wake up call, man. I was right there in it, in the middle of it. So that's about the time when I started, you know, kind of the time when I grew up, you know, it was time to actually get a career and stuff.
Cause you were fooling around. And
yeah.
Being an American.
Right, right.
Did you ever think, and I knew myself, as I was going through the whole process, I would, you know, vitamins and then working out, you know, I've always been kind of heavy. And I thought, are they killing us? I mean, I remember in the 90s was probably one of the first time that I just thought to myself, you know, we started hearing stuff about aspartame and things, how it's bad and how it's in all this stuff. But I think, are they killing us? Are they putting things in the food? What, did that ever come to you? I mean,
I started realizing that, you know, all these studies I was pulling up, because I wasn't going and looking for, you know, Dr. Carly or for Patrick Jordan the only thing I ever did was look at, you know, official studies and official, you know, I go to the NICH and all these different government sources and scientific papers and patents and all that stuff. So I didn't find it about all these activists until, I'd probably have to give Alex Jones credit for that, because right. he was the first tit that I started sucking, as most people, right? So, you know, I was looking at the real sources of these things, and I was going, wait a minute, how are they writing about this stuff and telling, you know, in this study we found that this causes cancer, this causes this, this causes this. I'm like, how are they doing these studies, but these studies aren't being applied in reality? Like, it's almost as if they're doing these studies because they plan on it, because they're right. Yeah, and
like, when is somebody going to realize that these vaccines are causing harm and stop this? And you're like, that never happens.
Well, and then I met Truat when I moved here to Utah. I met Dr. A. Truat, and he explained a lot to me, and that really boosted me forward. And he kept talking about the perfect example, which is the example I use in my documentary. And that was hard to find, man. This interview with, I can't remember his name right now, but, you know, he's working for the military and in their vaccine, you know. I was like, well, first of all, why is the military handling vaccines? Okay. and, you know, he goes to explain how, I mean, this is the very guy that actually did it. He goes on to explain how that they wanted to do something to test they've got all these this whole collection that they were showing in these porcelain vials of disease. They have every disease possibly known to man cataloged, and of course those that they create, right? Mm-hmm. So they wanted to do something. I can't remember how he explained it in the documentary. So they go up to, they decide, well, let's do a one that was really deadly. Let's do the Spanish flu, quote unquote Spanish flu, which had nothing to do with Spain. And, they go up to Alaska and the permafrost, and they dig up, these Inuit Eskimo, carcasses with the full support of the tribe, which I don't think knew what they were going to do. And there, lo and behold, they found one of this old lady with a lot of fat that had been preserved in the permafrost in Alaska, and they extracted the full DNA and RNA of the Spanish flu, what they call the Spanish flu, which is, you know, avian plus something else. And they bring it back to their little labs in their military offices, and they succeed in mapping its genome. So now you have the entire genome for this deadly, deadly, deadly flu. They change a few things, and because they've done all that work, they go ahead and they patent that, what do we call it? The swine flu.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They patent it. They call it the swine flu. Next thing you know, 2000, that was 2000 and, I think when the patent finally came back, it was 2007. Next thing you know, 2000 whatever comes along, 2008, 2009, and all of a sudden there's an outbreak of the exact same thing they dug up and patented. And everybody had to get the vaccine, and everybody had, right? And I'm looking at this.
In 1975, there was that swine flu.
Yeah, and the vaccine just destroyed people. It just absolutely destroyed people. But in this case, they had actually mapped the genome. They purposefully dug it up, mapped the genome, patented it, and, you know, I dare say released it. I mean, how... The very strain that they patented somehow that was non-existent before because it was over, it was done, it was buried in the permafrost, it was never going to be seen again back from 1917 or whatever it was, and all of a sudden, here it is again, and now we have all these different deaths. Well, guess what? They have a machine, a giant, giant machine, which I cover again in that documentary. And it's literally a disease-making machine. It's an epigenomic mapping machine that they can pretty much create disease. And I'm just viruses. You know, I'm going, what the, how, what? Their excuse is to have them to be able to make vaccines and stuff, right? So you've got these labs all over the country holding these horrible, horrible, horrible disease, and they're all military.
Yeah.
Something's wrong here, folks. Something's very wrong.
Yeah. Yikes.
So, you know, you take that story, you add it to all the other stories, you take the doctors in the early 1900s and say, hey, I've never seen a case of cancer until all my cows were, you know, until they started vaccinating these cows, and now every cow has cancer, right?
Right.
And basically what... It's real simple, you know, you don't even have to attack vaccines in general. Anything that you're shooting into your body, you know, take human growth hormone or the insulin shots that you're taking for diabetes, which are one of the targeted drugs that, you know, what are you injecting into your body? Well, they get that insulin, I think from pig or from cow, and the human growth hormone is bovine growth hormone. Well, there you go. You have just literally done what the Bible and what every single possible religious, spiritual, and just logical, reasonable, you know, study out there can tell you, which is never taint your blood. Never mix species. Never mix anything into your perfect, pure blood. Well, what the hell do you think is going to happen when you start mixing a programmable RNA DNA sequence into your programmable RNA DNA sequence? It's going to start flipping switches. It's going to start reprogramming. It's going to infect. It's going to attach itself to places where in the cow it knows what it's doing, but in the human it's like, wait, I gotta start reprogramming this human and making it more cow-like, right? You've just tainted your blood. I don't give a shit if it's a vaccine or if it's some, you know, how about a factor eight, the infamous, you know, blood, right? I mean, these people are fucking evil. No matter what they say their intent is, if you are injecting yourself with any form of animal or human DNA-based, you know, prion-based thing, then you are going to get a disease. Now, when that disease manifests is the question, and that's really their most beautiful scapegoat, is because at first they called it what was called a slow virus, right? Because the prion can incubate for up to 50 years that they know of. And so there you have it. What, you know, we found out that radiation or certain kinds of radiation and ultrasound will actually activate the prions.
Yeah.
So you're putting, you know, you got your phones, your cell phone towers, ultrasound is what they use to look at your baby. You know, so you've got these things in you that will be activated at some point, unless you die before they activate it. And they will cause you dementia, they will cause you disease, they will cause you cancer, they will cause you all kinds of things. But see, the problem is that the diseases generally don't happen, you know, right when you get the injection. It can take 20 years. You can pass it on to your children, right? I mean, it's
perfect. Weapon.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's hard, and so that's what you start seeing when you really start getting into the heavy research, and you see that every disease out there is something that's generally either patented or very well known by those who study it. You remember we were discussing the prions. They were actually putting prions into a mist, like into chemtrails, right? Mm-hmm. They were testing the delivery of these things through the air.
Wired magazine article.
Yeah, I mean, this is scary.
Basically telling you that, you know, basically.
Yeah. And, you know, you think about it, if you control those two things, if you control medical and food, if you control the health of people and the food that they eat, you control just about everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and you just wonder, you know, because they did a study on these rats probably within the last 2 years where, you know, they showed the rats, they showed the tumors that had developed, and they were basically in the same area that Jack's was. You know, lower, down by, you know, his dog business, like right there. And just exactly like the pictures of the rats with GMO-induced disease. So it's scary.
Sure. You know, and you've got the. I love the Patrick was the one that uncovered this. Patrick Jordan, he said, listen, they're going to tell you the most common side effects are redness, swelling, and what's the other one? Headache or something? I can't remember. And he's like, what that actually means. is that they say it's the most common, right? But what that really means is that you're having a systematic pain in your joints, right? You're having a systematic effect from the vaccine. Like if you're shooting squalene, for instance, into your joints, squalene is something you produce naturally, right? It's like your lubricant for your joints. You shoot a foreign squalene from an animal in there. And all of a sudden, your body says, holy crap, we've got an infection. It's a squalene, but it's not our squalene. We got to attack it. Unfortunately, the antibodies then attack your own squalene, and suddenly it's like a virus attacks your car and strips it of all oil, and all of a sudden the car won't run.
Yeah, and right? Then you have an epidemic of, what is that, just the pain? What do they call it?
Yeah, pain.
It's like, you're just in pain all the time, and they said it's your nerves over
right.
Nerves.
They also call it Gulf War syndrome.
Or Gulf War. Yeah. So, they call that. Bless you.
I mean, it's
fibromyalgia. It's, yeah, it's fibromyalgia. It's fibrosis.
To me,
it's fibrosis.
To me, it's no different than, you know, when you read these studies, and one of the things that being, like I said, kind of hyper-empathetic, I'm always thinking of all victims, not just myself or, you know. So, you know, every time you read these studies, you're reading about, well, 30 monkeys were used in this study, and of the 30 monkeys, 29 died of this infection and this, right? So they're purposefully... You got to understand, they're purposefully giving these animals disease to try to cure the disease or to control the disease, right? So without any conscious or empathy, they write that in their reports. They tell you what they're doing, what they're at, right? And one of them was about – I'll never forget the one that was about the interferon.
Right.
I mean, I couldn't believe what I was reading. It was like They were actually seeking. They weren't trying to cure a disease. They were angry, these scientists in the like 40s and 50s, and it was a mutual collaboration. Yeah, they could not get these animals sick. They could not inject the rabbits and make them sick because there was something interfering with the disease. And that they later on, when they found out what that was, they called it interferon, which just happens to be your T cells, your B cells, your T cells, and your killer, hunter-killer cells or whatever they're called, right? So you wonder, well, gee, how did AIDS come around? How did all these T cell immunoviruses, you know, come right? Well, they found out that why was interferon curing AIDS or helping it a lot? Well, because somehow they figured out how to prevent the interferon from doing its job. When did that happen? Well, they specifically went out of their way to find out what it was that was interfering with the ability of them to get these animals sick, and then once they found it, they turned it into a medicine, and they started creating these I don't know, whatever it is that they did to start interfering with the interferon process. So
it's just kind of like steroids or whatever. Like when you inject these in, they get your body stops creating its own testosterone. So isn't that kind of like maybe this in the same functionality, where they put some kind of interferon, something that mimics the interferon, and then the interferon stops working?
I don't think that in this particular case that happens a lot. That's actually how that's how they sterilize
the horses.
People and horses, yeah, people and animals, is that they inject pieces of a foreign, like a pig ovary, into a human, and the body creates antibodies against the ovary, and suddenly your body starts attacking spermatogenesis, the hairs on the sperm, that kind of thing, so that you cannot you know, have a child. I don't know if that's the second. I can't remember if that's the same thing with the interferon or not. The point was to not allow the problem with people with these AIDS and different immunovirus diseases is that their body can't. It's all about communication. So the interferon is what allows these cells to communicate with each other. So when your body detects that it has a problem or a disease or a virus, it's able to use the interferon process to get to the bone marrow. The bone marrow then creates, like making an emergency phone call, right? Yep. 911 call, and your bone marrow then produces the T cells and the spinal system. Mm-hmm. And that is what they prevented, is the ability for your cells to actually communicate with your body in order to produce those antibodies, those cells that come out then and attack. So your T cells, your B cells, your killer cells. So so again, you know, this is just one added thing to the whole story. But you see this purposeful intent. You see that, why were they doing this? Well, what was the problem? What was it that was the purpose of the interferon studies? Because they were purposefully trying to make an animal sick and could not, because something was interfering with the process. Something internally was interfering with the process of us making an animal sick. Animal can be a man too, but don't forget.
Was interfering.
God
was interfering.
Right, the design, right? The natural design of your body was interfering. Well, we got to find out what chemical that is that's done. Okay, well, we'll call it interferon. And, it's the purpose of these studies that so interests me, because there's never to cure a disease. It's always to improve a drug.
They're doing research. People automatically think, hey, they're doing research so that they can cure diseases. No, they're fucking not.
No, it's just it. I mean, they're perfecting weapons is what they're doing. And the more perfect weapon is one that can't be traceable. So you want it to be a slow killer. And Jones has been talking about slow weapons for a long time.
But the only thing that he's probably good for is the pushing of the disease. Now, when I send him information, through one of these social media platforms, like a direct message to him, that I don't think there's any way that he has not seen the message. I convey the information about prions and that particular information. And I just never really seemed to get, a response. Even when it was in first and foremost with the first, wave of information that I sent out there, and I said, you might want to, talk to these people, as I talked to Patrick Jordan, trying to spur some kind of dialogue or something. But I just don't – obviously, he's got so much money in his InfoWars health that he doesn't want people – he doesn't want to overstep that boundary,
Well, I've been scheduled for the InfoWars store show and then been unscheduled because I remember the first time, there are other hosts on GCN will try to get me on there. But the first time someone sent me this random email and asked me what I thought about, someone scheduled me, and the next thing I know I got this random email, asking me what I thought about Alex Jones. And without thinking about it, I had written this whole workup on Jones and where a lot of his stuff comes from and what he, and who his sponsors are and all that. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty damning. And I just went ahead and sent it, not thinking that that could be one of his little minions or agents. Next thing I know, I'm unscheduled. That's just how it is, One of his co-hosts, not his co-host, but one of the hosts on RBN actually came up and helped me out with my conference, but I'm not sure he actually helped. I think he sabotaged it because, I can't remember his name. I'll have to look it up. I can't remember his name, but he came up and he said he brought this soundboard and he was going to record it, and all these wires and cables, and just made a big ordeal about it. You think, oh, okay, here's a professional, and so because it was being recorded, I didn't even watch the conference. I was trying to take care of everybody and make sure it ran smooth, which it did, never got a copy, never something happened where the video, the audio didn't work, and I never got a copy of my own conference because I trusted in someone at GCN. Yeah. And so I couldn't sell it. I couldn't make the money back that I spent for it. It was horrible. It was a horrible feeling. I was in this person's hands. There's nothing I could do about it,
Right.
Didn't even consider that I'd be screwed over by someone. And you talk to anybody who's tried to throw these conferences or tried to throw even just one night events, and they'll tell you the same thing. It's a losing endeavor. You're going to lose money. You're never going to, it's very seldom that you're going to be successful when you try to put something, especially in a town like this, up in Utah. Yeah. So. But yeah, it's a horrible feeling. I wish I could remember his name. Damn it! No, it wasn't anybody in InfoWars. It was another host of GCN. But okay. I just can't remember.
There's been a number of people that have left InfoWars just recently. It was Jakari Jackson. I had no idea that he left. He's seemed like a nice young man, black gentleman, and. So he did some reports and things. He won some kind of, I think he won the one of the contests to begin.
Yeah.
And then this what's his name, the ex-Marine guy, left to kind of do other things. Joe Biggs, he was apparently friends with the guy, the journalist who was murdered a couple years ago, two or three years ago, and I can't remember his name, but he was friends with that journalist guy who some say Petraeus had something to do with it. But yeah, there's a lot of people leaving there, and Jones just all these health products, and he just really looks like he's getting just getting worse. He's just, his voice sounds horrible. It sounded worse than it has ever sounded, and it just if you look at his face, it's like it's just turning into a.
Well, I'm sorry. I know that I'm not popular in my discussion of the whole thing, but the whole movement is completely corrupt. I'm sorry. It's true.
It really is true. Entertainment. That's all it is. It's just entertainment. And then when you look at what's at stake, it's really kind of it's damaging, like you've pointed out many times.
Well, it's. I question it. I mean, at this point, I even question its whole purpose is making money. It's making money and this, the notion, I'll put it to you this way. One of the things that I value so much from finally getting to include the Bible under my arsenal of knowledge is that what the Bible taught me was truth. Okay, that the difference between what is real and what is fantasy. And everything is fantasy, right? History is fantasy. Everything's fake. Everything's a lie that we accept as truth, right? And so one of the most valuable things to me was to actually see for the first time in my life, realize what is really true, which means that there are no sides. There's no alternative truth. There's no alternative to truth. Come on. Truth can only be that there's only one truth in everything. There is no sides. There is no right and left of the truth. There is only truth. And when you find that, you discover that, that is one of the most spiritual concepts that you can imagine, right? And you're always, you can't forget it. You never not see it again, because you're basically talking about what's real, what's nature, what's, i.e. God, right? So, you listen to these people talk about the truth. We've got the truth. You know, it's like different brands of truth. Like fucking blue jeans, or like truth is a shirt or something that you can look. My truth is orange. What? What? What do you mean? And so that's what I started figuring out as I'm listening. Yeah, I'm listening to these people, and everybody has. Everybody has truth to sell, but this word truth apparently doesn't mean what we think it does, right? So, yeah, it's just, you figure out the whole thing's bullshit. The whole thing is bullshit. Everything these guys talk about is about a lie. Is it about money? Money's a lie. Money? Yeah. I mean, who do you think sets the value of money? Is it about politics? Politics are a lie. Politicians are liars. Politicians are professional actors. What is it? What is the truth? Well, the truth is you're talking about a bunch of stuff that is not real. And we are constantly, constantly talking about what is not real. And I find that, at this point, it's amusing to me that people can take themselves so seriously about what they're lying about. Some of them don't even know they're lying. And that's, again, because it's just so indoctrinated into it. We're so brainwashed with lies that we actually think they're the truth.
I mean, it's a building blocks, the building blocks of truth, like you say, like what is self-evident. And until people understand those basic building, basic building blocks of what truth is, what's self-evident and different things like that, they've done a masterful job of moving people away from the Bible. So
if anything, if there's one way that I could describe what the Bible describes as a true follower, a true Christian, true follower of Christ, it is someone who is so in touch with reality, so in touch with the true self-evident self-existence of nature that not one trick can get past him. because it, you know instantly what is real and what is fiction. And the Bible is anti-fiction, period, end of story. It's anti-Satan, in other words. What is Satan? Satan means adversarial. What is adversarial to reality? That is the perfect follower of Christ, if you will. Someone who will not attach anything to his good name. Someone who will not take a title, make a promise, take an oath, do anything, use anything fictional, or acknowledge or even respect anything fictional.
When it comes to, you know, like urologist or anything like that, and I'm like, I'm not impressed. I mean, I'm not impressed. You know, like, are you a lawyer? And I talk to them all the time, working on computers and things like that. And then I just think, like, wow, like where we've come with this whole thing, that flattering titles, lawyers, doctors, you know, football players, you know, paid slaves,
knowledge, you know, knowledge of useless information, basically, right? The law. The law is absolutely the law of persons, the law of fiction, right? Why do you need to have anything to do with that unless, oh, wait a minute, you're participating. You are acting as a fiction, so therefore you have the law. You need the law and you need the lawyer. But if you were not participating voluntarily in the system, then you would have no need to respect such flattering titles. If you were abiding by nature's law and eating food that grows out of the earth instead of out of a fucking factory or chemical, you know, plant, well, then you wouldn't need the doctor and his pharmaceutical medicines, because pharmaceutical medicines are treating the diseases they create. You're respecting these people, and therefore, and their creations. They're things that are not natural, and that's it, man. It's just so simple, right? You do the right thing. You don't need these titles. You don't need these people who say they have some knowledge from the fruit of the tree of good and evil. You don't need it. They're just concepts. They're creations of man. You don't need them. But we are in a place where we've all been affected because of our belief systems, because we do participate in all of these quote unquote truths, truths of many colors.
Right? We participate in all of these activities.
Right. Respect. We respect things as real, which are not real. Again, you respect lies as truths. That is the epitome of the alternative media, quote unquote, is to respect lies that are as truths, and to talk about fictional things as if they are real, right? And certainly these things affect us. Don't get me wrong, but to talk about them in a way that they're almost like it's like a part of nature, like money grows on trees and government owns all the trees or something. I don't know. It's to talk about it as if it's a natural part of life. Yeah. And that's where it becomes truth, right? It's the sort of false sense of what is true.
Yeah, and then, of course, it's disrespectful to not respect someone who's in the military or, you know, like, oh, I don't believe doctors. Oh, what do you mean you don't believe, you know, you don't believe doctors? Like, I don't trust them. I don't trust the system that created them. I don't trust that system. I don't, you know. I try to plant, I think I have planted seeds to people so that that there's no way that they can't not know. I've said at work any number of times, this is it's just us participating in the fiction again.
Well, you know, I haven't been to a hospital. I can't tell you last time I was in a hospital, I think, was when I still lived in New York. No, that's right. I was in L.A. and a cat clawed my back and I got a staph infection. I had to go in, and I think that was the time where I got some, I don't even know what happened. It was like an unnecessary surgery or something. Guy comes in, takes this big chunk out of my back. I have no idea what even happened. I got left on the operating table, for about 30 minutes, 40 minutes I sat there, and then I finally got up, bleeding from my back because no one came in to close up the wound. I don't even know if that was my doctor that came in and took. This is how messed up the system is. It's disgusting, especially in L.A. And that was many years. That was over a decade ago, and I haven't been to the hospital since. Why? Well, I know the statistics. Doctors are the number one killers in America.
Yeah.
And that's not my statistic. That's the Journal of American Medicine. That's many other studies I've come up with.
Yeah.
You add on to that the fact that the doctors are essentially the only way you can get pharmaceutical drugs is through the doctor, right? Practicing that witchcraft. then yeah, doctors are by far the number one killer in America because they are responsible for not testing you to see what this drug is going to do to you.
Right.
Yeah, we just trust them. We trust that they subscribe a drug and that, you know, we take it and we're going to get better, and that doesn't really happen.
Well, I always tell people, I say, look at it this way, man. If I come to you and I say, hey, I'm a doctor, I'm going to be doing your surgery today, it's a little bit risky, we're going to be using some experimental drugs, because really all drugs are experimental. but don't worry, I have malpractice insurance for millions of dollars, so if I do harm you and ruin your life, at least you can get money. So basically what he's just told you is that I have insurance to malpractice, for evil practice, for wrong practice. I can do anything I want to you because I'm insured. I'm above the law. I have no ethical or moral constraints because I have insurance that covers anything I do wrong.
Yep.
That's pretty scary when you think about what that really means. Oh, malpractice insurance. Mal means fucking evil.
Yeah. It does.
No thanks. I'd rather have you responsible for your actions so that you don't fuck up instead of having you irresponsible for your actions so that you don't care if you fuck up. Am I, is there something wrong with me for thinking that way, or am I just, again, hyper-empathetic?
I mean, I think that there are, you know, and getting back to this empathy that people have lost. There's a lot of people out there that don't, and they say this about these elites, that they lack this empathy, or that they don't have where they don't really care about what they do to other people. And then, I mean, you said that, as a child growing up, there was, I mean, you had empathy and a connection to pretty much everything. You think that's maybe the one of the reasons why you're doing what you're doing today, or no?
I question myself all the time why it is that I gave up career and why I do what I'm doing, why I haven't had a job in so long, because, you know, for the most part, people could call, if you wanted to, you could just say, I'm a bum. And that's fine. If that's the way you want to look at it, I'm a bum. But, I rely on the charity of others, and I hope to give of my life work here, which, by the way, I'm gonna print in January, because if I don't, I'm gonna keep correcting and correcting and correcting. So, I'm gonna repost the new version here really soon. Okay. I just didn't want to do it till it was done, but, before Christmas anyway. And so, you know, I don't know how to explain what it is in people like me, and there's many people like me who feel that I have to do what I'm doing. And that probably sounds strange or corny to some people, like you have some mission or something from some higher power, but, you know, if that sounds corny to you, then you're probably not the kind of person that I'm searching for. And I am searching for people who are like-minded, who are willing to learn the law that they already know in their hearts, but have never been experienced, have never been given it. And that's what I'm providing in this work, is to try to decipher the law, the Bible, basically. And so that you can see how to, because I can't do it alone. And I realize that, you know, what's that?
You're going to create the Anti-Bar Association? Or
no, well, it's
don't give
just,
it a title, but
it's the anti-fiction society, anti-fiction, if you will. I mean, it literally, stop lying to your children. Stop promoting Christmas and the Easter Bunny.
There was a commercial where there was like six or about eight kids, and they're sitting there and they're describing Santa Claus, right? And this one girl says, he comes down the chimney, but not like a robbery. So they're, and it was so weird. It was like a commercial for them saying, you know, continue to lie to your children.
Well, and it's strange because, you know, my vicarious kids live next door. And the one is about 9, 10 years old, and she's going through that process right now where she's realizing, oh, you know, these things aren't real. Her thing is the elf on the shelf or something, which is the new thing where the parents make the elf do different capers and things. I don't know how to explain it, but she knows it's not real, and she knows that she's going to get like candy or whatever. She also knows that it's designed to make her act a certain way, to behave, you know, just like Santa. I've got a naughty list here. Are you on my naughty list? She knows that her parents are specifically manipulating her to make her behave a certain way. She knows that. She understands that in the basic, most basic of functionalities, she doesn't seem to mind it, right? And then you take that on, and that's a microcosm of citizenship. That's a microcosm of everything that we go through every day where we're manipulated by lies. Except the problem is the older you get, the more realistic the lies become, right? You graduate from Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. So the question is, why are we starting our children out on a cocktail of lies unless we want them to be, you know, to be drunk on lies by the time they're 18. It's very disturbing to me, and that's what I want to end. That's what I want to start, a society where we're honest with each other, where we are we live in complete honesty, where no one can possibly be offended by the truth, because the truth is the truth. It has no sides. It has no, right? It cannot. Can you imagine living in a world where the truth is actually the truth? And I don't think most people can.
Right.
But how wonderful it would actually be.
Somebody like, hey, stop lying to your children that there's this guy who brings them toys. Why can't you just say, here, this is Christmas. We're going to buy you some things. I mean, it's almost as if,
well, why have Christmas at all?
Themselves, they remove themselves from, exactly, that too, but they remove themselves from what they've done. You've gone out and you go out and you buy your kids things, but then someone else bought it for you.
You know,
it's
what?
Almost like, if you don't like it, don't blame me.
The most special gifts to me are just when someone comes up to me and said, oh, hi, I thought about you, and here, this is the result. Right? Why do I have to have a Christmas or a special date, a birthday, for instance, or some Hallmark holiday to give gifts? Why isn't every day the day that I give gifts? Because that's what the Bible tells me. That's how you should live,
and
right?
You're think that there's you know, in order to get to this particular reality, getting to the truth and starting to function in that the way that we should. You almost have to kind of design things in opposition to it, so that it draws attention to it in a way where people won't completely just, you know, push it out of their mind. You know what I mean? Like, you know, bring like in the anti, like everything that we think that we should do, we have to create this alternate reality. And then when people say, why are you doing this? And you say, because what we're doing, what we've done all this time is wrong, and I'm just pointing that out. You know what I mean? Like, does it make sense that?
Well, it's again, right and wrong are concepts that don't even belong. It's either true or it's not true. Right? You forget the evil and good and the right and the wrong, left and the right.
Because right, we don't even know what right
or it's
knows.
Not truth.
Well, right? That's the problem. We don't even know what right and wrong is anymore. So, but yet we still look at things in those terms, and we determine things in those terms. Like, oh, that's that ain't right, or that's so wrong.
I'll end this by just, I like to read these quotes. I put these quotes at the very, very end of my documentary. After everything's over, the credits are over, I flash these real quick for those who actually see them. Yeah, I actually know the vaccine one, the lethal injection. And, you know, the quoter is, of course, people will have different opinions of, but, you know, it makes very good points, Rudolf Steiner, from some of his speeches. He says, this is my concern, and this is what we're up against when we're talking about vaccines. Now, this is 1917 that he's speaking. He says, the whole trend goes in a direction where a way will finally be found to vaccinate bodies so that these bodies will not allow the inclination towards spiritual ideas to develop. And all their lives, people will believe only in the physical world they perceive with the senses. People are now vaccinated against consumption, and in the same way they will be vaccinated against any inclination towards spirituality. All right, now part of spirituality is truth. Okay, spirituality is to never allow yourself to fall victim to fiction, which is basically what we live in. He says in another speech, the mystery of the human double, he says, a longing will arise and become general opinion. Whatever is spiritual, whatever is of the spirit is nonsense. It's madness. Endeavors to achieve this will be made by bringing out remedies to be administered by inoculation, just as inoculations have been developed as a protection against diseases. Only these inoculations will influence the human body in a way that will make it refuse to give a home to the spiritual inclinations of the soul. People will be inoculated against the inclination to entertain spiritual ideas. Endeavors in this direction will be made. Inoculations will be tested that already in childhood will make people lose any urge for spiritual life. And I gotta tell you, I've got some other quotes from Aldous Huxley that say the same thing. And I gotta tell you, I think this has already taken place. I think that this.
Can you send those to, if
sure.
you have them?
On, okay. Sure. Yeah, those are also, yeah, those are in my book too, so. But yeah, I'll forward those. But it's just amazing to me when you read these writings. And this is a neutral a stance, but you know, someone like Huxley, he's talking about the Brave New World. The Brave New World must kill spirituality, absolutely. You know,
strawmanstory.info. You can find Clint's work over there, strawmanstory.info. Thanks, Clint. Thanks for being on. Stand in line with me. Discuss some things with you after the show. Thanks for everybody for listening and hanging out today. Jules, sorry to hear about your cats. I thought we had more time than we did.
Here's to Jack. Here's to Jack hanging out in doggy heaven.
I'm doggy heaven, yeah. Hey. Holistic system, all the systems. I will MK Ultra, y'all. Put the MK scope on y'all. If the MK hits you, it's guaranteed to open y'all. 220 rounds a minute, try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list, that's retarded babble. Protesters make the hit list soon as they start to rabble. They're nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim.
That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary for the court.